Willie and D-Mace, hour number two here on 102.5 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. This studio has also been the site of a serious accident. The D-Mace bobblehead, which happens to be the Ravens bobblehead, has been severely injured. And it has launched a full investigation. We have put pictures on Twitter. Just a caution before you observe these pictures. They're a little bit disturbing. So it may not be for kids, D-Mace, but there's also a lot of swirling rumors about what happened to put D-Mace, the bobblehead, in a precarious position. Before he took the fall, there's a suspected foul play from Jared Stillman. Not of the actual knockoff, but sort of putting him in
the
a place.
The setup. Yeah, the setup.
And so now B-Man on Twitter, I'm sorry, on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, I can't wait to watch the episode on the ID channel titled, Who Beheaded D-Mace? Because he was beheaded. So Jonathan Hutton joins us from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow. So, Hutt, it's been a rough morning here.
Keith Morrison's going to be knocking on the door. There's two men you don't want knocking on your front door, Willie. It's Phil Williams from News Channel 5 and then Keith Morrison from Dateline NBC. if you have those two knocking, it's not good news, and you're likely going to prison.
I cannot confirm or deny that Phil Williams and a crew from Channel 5 has asked for the surveillance footage of the studio. I don't even know. Do they have a camera in here, D-Mace, at all times? They have the cameras on us, the host, during the show. But the area where the bobbleheads, I think it's shielded from the cameras. I'm not sure if we have evidence.
I think I have a collection of Titans bobbleheads. No joke. It's like Eddie, Steve, Javon. Who else? I think Bullock is in there. Mace, you may be a part of this. I may be able to contribute to replacing said bobblehead.
Yeah, because
now this is in storage somewhere. I'll have to go dig this up. But yeah.
Was there a Titan D-Mace bobblehead? Because it's the Ravens one that's been injured here, and he's post surgery now.
Well,
his head's back on.
If there was a curse bobblehead, would they have done the curse bobblehead on his second stint? I don't think they would have. Would they have done that?
Mm-hmm. Hmm. They could have.
But
maybe they did.
Yeah.
Maybe they did. Preston Penn, I'm trying to think of everyone else who would know. Please contribute to the cause and let D-Mace know if he has one.
Yeah.
Bobbleheads were big back in the early 2000s. I mean, surely they've got one for D-Mace.
I would think so. I haven't
they
seen
should.
It.
Though.
Although, Mace, you know what they did? They had a trade-in. You trade in the Derek Mason bobblehead, you get another one free whenever you became a Baltimore Raven.
There we go.
There is one of the prime suspects, though, is the UC Soros Milwaukee Admiral bobblehead that looks nothing like UC in the fit, just like the Derek Mason bobblehead. It doesn't really look like D-Mace.
Yeah.
But another texter says, did Juice say no goal after he knocked the D-Mace bobblehead over? Good stuff.
He probably did.
So, Hutt, we've got the table set for the preseason opener against the 49ers on Saturday. The one thing that I want to start the discussion off with is just how thankful I am, as just somebody who likes to learn about what's going on with the team, how forthcoming and insightful Brian Callahan is with the media.
Yeah.
He really answered all the questions. I think I look back in the Vrabel era where there was a big mystery on who was playing. You didn't know who was even going to dress, but he told everybody everything today. So that helps, I think, all of us learn what's going on.
I think part of it is the fact that the starters are legitimately going to receive snaps. And he said this from a while back that he wants to see his players play moving forward throughout the preseason. And I think for good reason, I would be nervous about it. Like Andy Reid's playing Patrick Mahomes roughly a quarter in their preseason game. I would be extremely nervous about it. But you have to go through, especially as a first-time play caller and head coach. Yeah, you want your guys out there. And you want the communication between, okay, what plays do you like, what do you not like? You get a sense and a feel for how everything's going to work mechanically. Three preseason games. This is the area where you can actually do that. and it's beneficial to play as opposed to just getting everything done during the joint practice work. I lean towards understanding what he's doing, and I think if you're going to play these guys, what's the harm in saying who's not going to play, given the fact that, I mean, Levis is going to go out there and legitimately go out there, unlike us wanting to know if Ryan Tannehill's going or Derrick Henry's going to receive one snap in the preseason.
Another thing that we haven't really talked about a whole lot, but it's noteworthy because of the situation. Nick Folk is clearly going to be the kicker this coming year, but there's a new kickoff, right? And I do think strategic how you want to do the kickoff is going to be something to watch. And Nick Folk is going to turn 40 years of age during the season. So he's getting up there in age. You want to see if he can still get it done. The other thing that is, I think, pertinent to the preseason opener is they said that Ryan Stonehouse is not going to punt. He wants to punt at some point in a preseason game, but they're going to hold him back for a while, maybe until later in the preseason. But everything is tracking for him to get back out there.
Yeah, and I mean, and we've seen good signs of him being ahead of schedule. If you mock the cliche of that, I think Stonehouse certainly fits the anti-version and the truthful version of being ahead of schedule. I'm surprised about what he said about his recovery and all that. Nick Folk, you're right. So, I mean, we're going to see a lot of Narveson and Ty Zettner whenever we kick off things on Saturday. The new kickoff rule is intriguing. What intrigues me is to actually see it play out in week one and see how little teams across the league, not just the Titans, actually show, Willie, because we're told, you know, it's so bland. You know, the Hall of Fame game, the longest return, I believe, was to the 32-yard line. I think there's more tricks in the bag because you could have two returners, two players back in that zone. The kicker's going to Nick Folk. I mean, he's going to have to kick into that zone if you don't want the automatic spot of the football. It is a jarring rule change in the grand scheme of what we've seen across the league over years and decades, really. Not talked about enough. In an era where they're tweaking things all the time to benefit health and safety and trying to put scoring maybe above some of the other fundamental aspects of what we're used to football being, this is another one of those. And they're getting this from the XFL, I believe, implementing it now. And while we didn't see game-changing breakout plays every single return in the spring league, what we did see was more returns and more excitement than just, all right, time to go to the fridge, grab a beer, maybe go warm up some leftovers and come back whenever they're about to snap the football after the commercial break. This will be a reason to actually watch, especially if they're going to add a lot of tricks into what they're doing. And I think you want a player back there personally that can just break a tackle. You break one tackle on this return setup and you're getting an extra 10 to 15 yards in how I view it. Just because of the way that it's set up for the return to go full steam ahead and the type of player you could put back there now.
We're talking with Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mike with Hutton Withrow, talking Tennessee Titans and their camp. They got a game coming up this Saturday, the first game of the preseason, so we're anticipating that. Now, what are you looking forward to, what are you anticipating, Hut, this first game? And is it any different from, say, last year, the year before?
Man, I think if you're a fan of this football team, you're watching right tackle, and you're watching the edge pass rush. Because aside from watching the football, watching Will Levis and all the receivers and the two backs out of the back, all that, because you want to see if what you've heard through the media is legitimate or not. How bad is the right side of the offensive line really been? And who's in the rotation to work into that spot at right tackle and right guard? And you want to see the addition at left tackle to find out if J.C. Latham is as good as advertised, if Tavondre Sweat is as dominant as advertised. Those dudes are going to get a lot of reps. The reps, though, that are impactful and meaningful over the next 10 to 20 days are coming to right tackle, right guard, and at the edge rush spot where they don't have a ton of depth. And I think it's also important to note they're looking for eight offensive linemen, not just one guy to start. Injuries are going to occur. Let's assess deep into this game what it actually looks like, because it was not great in that department last year. They were not NFL quality when it came to the depth state of this 53-man roster. That's where it actually plays a massive factor, because not only do you need a starter that can be adequate, Mace, those guys are going to get dinged up. And then what happens whenever your rotational players who are active on game day rotate in and affect this offense in a massive way? And I don't know about you guys. Here's what I took away as well. The splitting the reps at quarterback after Levis hits the bench with Mason Rudolph and Malik Willis. They're going to give Willis an opportunity, a full opportunity. And I'm not going to go as far today as to say he's beating out Mason Rudolph. I think he's getting a roster spot. He has to prove he gets a roster spot. They keep three quarterbacks. I don't know if you guys
I'll tell you what.
Took the bait on that the way I did.
I'll tell you what.
They want to be convinced to keep three.
It has been something to note, because I think Mason Rudolph is clearly the backup quarterback. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
I agree.
But it has surprised me, based on that, how many reps they're giving the threes in general, but Willis in particular. He's getting a lot of reps at practice for a third-string quarterback. A lot.
I agree.
During these.
I think he intrigues them on what they can do and how they can.
And he hasn't played that well. I don't think he's played real well. For me, he's made a lot of mistakes, fumbled snaps, interceptions. In the scrimmages.
Totally okay. All fair, Willie. Let me put it in this context though. Let's compare him to what we saw last year at this time.
Yeah.
How would you compare the two players? I've seen a vast improvement in just the confidence level. The defense, we hear they want players, let's see, like Kenneth Murray. They've said they want Kenneth Murray to just play not mistake-free, but not afraid to make a mistake. Mm. Like, just let it rip, one read, and go. That to me is also the mentality that I would want Malik Willis to play with, based on what I saw last year, where it's just tuck and go and run and get out of there. And I've seen a better version of Malik Willis, and now we get to see him in a game situation with the head coach in his helmet, and the mechanics of how this offense is going to work. Willis has got to also prove that he can run all of that as well, which was in many cases last year, even when he started, many cases where it was not the type of level that you would see out of an NFL quarterback whatsoever.
Now, Hutt, do you think this coaching staff, once they finally got here and got into practice, more importantly, you know, these two-a-day practices, they realized that, because even Callahan said it, like, listen, we need to improve across the line. The left side is doing good, but we need to improve. The right side is still a work in progress. Do you think they finally realize how inept this offensive line is, in particular on the right side, is? Because it just seems like they still, even with, you know, Dylan Raiden's there and Brunsko, and now that Nicholas is back, it still feel as if they don't know what they have on the right side.
Man, I think they kind of knew, Derek.
Mm-hmm. And not in a good way.
I mean, at Nicholas Petit-Frere, let's just be real here. At his best, he's an average right tackle in the NFL. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's what he's proved up until this point, yeah.
I hope the ceiling's a little higher than that.
But that's what he's proved. Like, he's just an average.
But he's
tackle.
Still pretty young. We talked about it. He's
where
he's,
do you set the bar, though? I set the bar at average. I keep using the word adequate.
I think you kind of like temper your expectations, right? It depends on how excited you want to be. But that's a. I think we're all scared to think he's better than that. Yeah. I hope he's better than that.
A year from now, they're upgrading more than Nicholas Petit-Frere, I guess, is my point. They'll have the chance to upgrade more. They need another offseason. We've stated that too. I've mentioned that before. I think they feel great going into actual putting the pads on, like Mace is alluding to. But so if they just get adequate, if they get average play, consistent play on the right side at tackle, that's when I actually think you feel good about everything tying together, because you have Cushenberry at center. And I know they had, you know, the retirement at guard, but I'm not as worried about right guard as I am right tackle, and just getting some type of play where you feel okay going into a game that you can manage whatever talent is going to be across from you on each Sunday. right or left side. I think they feel great about the left three. Mm-hmm. Left side of this line is set. But it's not good on the right side. And, you know, that I know that Coach mentioned Harrell today as a solution, a possible solution, someone that he had to mention as off the edge because Arden Key's suspension and what we've seen. Hey, who's that player to step up on the offensive line that's a solution? It's got to be Nicholas Petit-Frere. But, again, the solution doesn't have to be he's on the same shelf as J.C. Latham on the left. He's just got to be okay. And I think setting the bar there is fair mm-hmm. for a guy that's a second-round pick that we've only seen play during his rookie season and that's been banged up and coming back. Someone asked me the question recently, is it his job to lose? And I said, he better come back with this mentality that it's his job to take back, not his job to lose. Nothing's going to be handed to him because there's not much to point to that says that he deserves just to have this as a layup gimme to be a starter on the right side, other than the depth situation where, I mean, if he doesn't just stake claim to this spot, they've got real problems because it's not like this is NFL quality depth among the offensive line, especially at the tackle spot.
Yeah, you're right. When I look at this team, Hutt, and I'm optimistic about what I believe they can do. If you're talking 11-on-11 offense and defense,
sure,
I think they can hold their own, especially within their division. But I'm starting to get a little. I don't want to use worried, but I'm just starting to hesitate just a tad bit.
In what way?
With the injuries or the management. I forgot who I was talking to someone on the sideline today. And I said, I don't come from a world where you're managing a 27, 28-year-old individual so he can make it to the season. And then you got another guy that is dealing with a hamstring or some type of soft tissue injury in Awuzie. To me, there are a lot of, we hope this hit, because if it hits, then we're great. But if it doesn't hit, man, we're going to be setting ourselves back.
And if we have
back.
Too long of a list of that, they're not all going to hit.
We're setting ourselves back. You got guys that you're depending on that are either injured or you're managing them so they won't get injured. I know we haven't talked a lot about that lately, but I'm starting to see it like they're each way. The last couple of days I've went out there, the starting corners are not out there.
Right. Jamal Adams would be in this group as well.
Exactly. Yeah.
And Jared said he looks
I'm
like a coach.
I'm not worried, but it's just like these are things that I'm paying attention to.
Well, again, I'll just go back. NFL quality depth, they have not had over the last couple of seasons. They're still working through that, and it's hard to build that back up with six draft picks where you want to have the younger players coming up behind some vets. It doesn't surprise me that they want to manage the practice time of Jamal Adams, for instance, who's going to be a rotational piece and a package-type player anyway. But at corner, I mean, there's get to the regular season and bring these guys and put them in for what you pay them to be on an island covering some of the top players in the National Football League at wide receiver who are now getting paid that top tier money. That's L'Jarius Sneed and Awuzie. Because behind them, just going to the depth discussion, you have a rookie in Brownlee, and then you have Trey Avery, who was a part of the depth concerns going into the offseason. Caleb Farley is a part of the depth right now.
And
he's injured now. Yeah, but, mm-hmm. I mean, again, I haven't thought about Caleb Farley in a long, long time.
Yeah.
But he's next up to be a potential backup to Trey Avery if one of these guys goes down with a knee injury. You see what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. That's the depth that we're talking about. What happens if J.C. Latham turns an ankle in week one?
I think everybody held their breath because he went down today, and everybody was like,
But again, like you normally have the Dennis Kelly type player. This team has normally had that guy. They can barely find someone that you feel okay with that doesn't keep you up at night on a Saturday going into a Sunday game to play right tackle currently. You know, you've got Radins, who's done some things that can swing and do different spots. But again, we've also seen results that have not been good, and he hasn't been a solution at right tackle. It's been Nicholas Petit-Frere or bust right now. My point is, they can make things work and get to the regular season with a healthy starting 11 on each side, but you don't want to have to go to your bag of depth if you were to lose a guy before you get to week one, because if you're there, then you're really having some concerns because you're not there yet. That's the difference to me between the Titans and, say, the Texans of last year. They had a lot of injuries, the Houston Texans did. And they were able to overcome, especially the offensive line. I think they played 11 different combinations, 9 to 11 different combinations, offensive linemen in front of a rookie. But they maintained because of the – and you get that with a lot of high draft picks and a lot of picks in the NFL draft because you've sucked. That was Houston. But they were able to have guys that were able to come in and be adequate. That's what the Titans need right now. They just need some average play because they're getting above average play on the left side. And they're looking for above average play from their quarterback. By the way, Chad Withrow just sat down next to me here in studio and devoured a sub sandwich, Willie, like I have never seen him devour before.
Impressive. Did he breathe?
Said Quiznos. Quiznos as well, Willie, is what he said.
Toasted?
Toasted. Yeah, toasted.
So he just woofed it down.
Yeah, I don't know if we can you guys hear Chad at all right now?
We can hear him in the background, yeah.
Yeah, he said toasted, and go ahead, Chad.
How many bites did he take?
French dip. Toasted French dip au jus.
Ah, good one.
Willie knows the sandwich well. Willie knows Quiznos well.
Yes, I
do. Returning Chad. Chad's mic is now on. So,
yeah,
yes.
That's a go-to right there. That's a good one. The hot sub, the toasted one, the au jus. Yeah.
Very nice.
The au jus was delicious.
Perfect
accent for that Quiznos sub, Willie. Prices have gone up since when you and I went over there.
Yeah, we spent a lot of time with that sandwich. Quiznos. Yep.
Did you have water or did you have a soft drink?
I haven't had anything to drink.
How can you eat? Whoa! Stop the press! No, let's stop the presses here. You're a serial killer, man. How can you eat a sandwich without nothing to drink? Come on!
I'll one up you. I just had a foot long French dip, and now I have some Miss Vicky's Smokehouse Barbecue chips, and still no water, nothing to drink.
Wow.
I'm gonna roll right through.
The au jus was what he used to wash everything down with.
Oh,
it's got water and liquid involved.
No liquid whatsoever.
Jack can put down some food now.
Okay. Well, glad to hear that the au jus
exactly.
Was tasty. Okay. Great stuff, guys. Hutt, we'll talk to you next week, and we'll see how the preseason opener goes. We'll have a game to dissect.
Will I see you guys on Saturday? That's the big question.
Oh, yeah. Withrow, don't choke over there, man. Get you some water, okay? Get you a soft drink.
I'm just going to suffer through the meat sweats that I have going over here right now. I'll be good.
All right. At some point, Chad, we'll hydrate.
Exactly.
Yes.
We're going to take a break.
On to the preseason, guys. Thank
there we go. Yep. We're there. We made it. You're listening to Willie and D-Mace here on 102.5 The Game.